Thank you for standing by, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to today's webinar. We have with us Mr. Nicolas Bornozis, President of Capital Link, organizer of the event. I must advise you that this webinar is being recorded today. We now pass the floor to Mr. Bornozis. Go ahead, sir.
Good morning, or good afternoon to everyone, depending on where everyone is located today. Welcome to Capital Link's webinar series. I am Nicolas Bornozis, President of Capital Link, organizer of the webinar today. Today's webinar will be a roundtable discussion on the topic of navigating through the perfect storm. IMO 2020, the coronavirus, and the extended Chinese New Year have created a kind of perfect storm for shipping across all sectors with adverse impact on demand and freight rates. The webinar includes CEOs from leading dry bulk and tanker companies who will discuss how they have adapted to the IMO 2020 reality, how they are navigating through the current market conditions as a result of the coronavirus, and what to expect moving forward. As we discussed coming to the call, the issues regarding IMO 2020 compliance, you know, are to a large extent common in both sectors, and would be quite interesting to see how they differ in the dry bulk side versus the tanker side. Moderating the discussion today is Randy Givens, Maritime Shipping Group Head, Equity Research Analyst at Jefferies. Our featured panelists are Kim Ullman, CEO of Concordia Maritime, Marco Fiori, CEO of Bermuda SPA, Valentios Erivalentis, President and CEO of Pyxis Tankers, and Stamatis Xantanis, Chairman and CEO of Synergy Maritime Holdings. The event is accessible through a live audio webcast and then will also be available as an audio archive through www.capitallinkwebinars.com. After the discussion, there will be a live Q&A session. Webinar participants can submit questions through the sidebar on the presentation page. You can see titled Submit a Question, or you can email your questions to questions@capitallink.com. Please note, you can submit a question at any time during the event, and your question will be replied during the Q&A session. The discussions and opinions expressed by the panelists are not intended as legal or investment advice or advice of any kind, as a matter of fact, and are provided for informational and educational purposes only, and Capital Link bears no responsibility for them. Furthermore, the panel discussion may contain forward-looking statements concerning future events. Capital Link has made a strategic commitment to the shipping and maritime industries, and in addition to our annual conferences, we also have a weekly shipping newsletter. We hold industry webinars on a regular basis, and you can access our webinar library for past and upcoming webinars at webinars.capitallink.com. And finally, please note that the day of our 14th annual Capital Link International Shipping Forum, organized in New York in partnership with Citi, will be held on Monday, March 30th at the Metropolitan Club in New York City, and we hope to see you there. Thank you all for participating. Randy, the floor is yours.
Hey, thanks so much, Nicolas. As Nicolas said, you know, this is certainly a timely podcast with that perfect storm of IMO, coronavirus, extended Chinese New Year, and so on. So with that, before we get into some of those specific industry topics, I'd like each of the participants just to give a brief overview of their respective companies, just to kind of differentiate between products owners or dry bulk owners, just so we know a little bit more about the panelists. So Kim, if you'll start with Concordia Maritime.
Yes, sure. Thanks for inviting me to this. Concordia Maritime is a Swedish company, publicly listed in Stockholm. We're a product tanker company, you could say, predominantly with the 13 tankers and one Suezmax tanker on top of that. Other than that, we belong to the Stena Group, so we have a so often when I say something about Concordia Maritime, it includes also the wider spectra of the Stena Group.
Perfect. Thanks. Marco?
Yeah. Bermuda, it's a company who's based in Italy. We have a mixed fleet. When I started this job last year, we had mainly a dry cargo fleet with 10 dry cargo ships and three tankers. today we've been a little bit shifting in positioning ourselves more on the tanker side, and we still have the 10 dry cargo ships, but we've added, we have now 7 LR2s that we control, 2 MRs, and 2 Handys, and there's a certain number of ships that should still be coming in, so pretty soon we should be reaching a critical mass, about 25, 28 ships.
Excellent. Eddie?
Thank you, Randy. Thank you for the invitation, Capital Link. We are Pyxis Tankers. We are listed at NASDAQ. We have a fleet of 5 tankers, predominantly the MRs. The company is focusing on the MR sector, and the growth we see is in that sector. The MR is the workhorse of the industry, and we want to concentrate on that type of vessels.
Perfect. And finally, Stamatis.
Good morning, everyone. I'd like to thank Nicholas and Capital Link for arranging this very interesting webinar today. My name is Stamatis Tsantanis, and I'm the CEO of Synergy Maritime Holdings. The company operates in the dry bulk segment, and in particular in the Cape sizes, which is the largest conventional size of the dry bulk. We are listed on the NASDAQ Stock Exchange, and we are the only U.S.-listed company pure-play owners of Capesize ships.
Perfect. All right, well, let's dive in. You know, we'll certainly get to coronavirus and kind of some demand and supply impacts that has had in a few minutes here. But just starting with IMO 2020, you know, obviously that was the theme of shipping in 2019 in preparation for the new fuel requirements and the new regulations that have been in effect for about 7 weeks now. Just to the panel, if you can kind of discuss some of your first thoughts on it. Have you seen any of the demand catalysts from incremental product flows for the tanker guys? And then for everyone, you know, how have you seen fuel availability or compatibility? I know, Stamatis, you're the only one with some scrubbers installed. Well, where the other owners here are just doing the VLSFO or even maybe some MGO. So if we want to start, maybe, Kim, if you can kind of start us off with any impacts to tanker demand from IMO 2020 and why or why not?
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, I have to say that things have, you know, developed the way we kind of thought it would develop. Prices were not, spreading as much as everybody was speculating. The spread should be several hundred, $400, $500, $600 a ton. So it didn't really, because we always thought that if there is an interest, or if there is a big demand of MGO or that sort of product, the industry will fix it, and so they have. So we haven't seen much of that. So from that point of view, there's nothing huge about it. Even the spreads have come down lower than we anticipated. So from that point of view, as I said, nothing special. Demand-wise, I can't really see that I've seen any particular trade that has been bigger than before or anything like that. But there is an overall sentiment of, not only sentiment, it is happening. There are more cargoes that we do see from the west going out to the east to be cleaned up or reduced in sulfur content. So there are some, but not huge. But all these small things together help, of course. But I can't really point at one particular trade. Maybe some of the other guys can do that, but that's my overall sentiment. Things didn't shock everybody as it was speculated to be.
Sure, Marco, Eddie, any thoughts on why that happened? Or why it didn't happen? Maybe was it just inventory building in preparation, so the kind of transition was a lot smoother? Or is there not as much compliance as originally thought, now the carriage ban being only 8, 9, 10 days away? Do you think that affects the market?
Well, Personally, I think that things have been developing the way they are because you spoke about a perfect storm. And I think notwithstanding all the problems that we're finding on the tanker side, rates have come down, but they're still at a very healthy level. That means that there is still demand. On the specifics of bunkers, I think we've moved to VLSF, to very low sulfur. We find the supplies there. And as Kim was saying, the spread has been reducing kind of, the spread has been a little bit lower, has been much lower than what people expected. So, you know, I think everybody, I think on the bigger ships probably still makes sense about the scrubbers. But I think in general, I think it's those kind of things that everybody can say that he was right in something that he did. I don't think that there's any overwhelming truth or event that has been proving somebody tremendously wrong.
I mean, on another note, Randy, let's not forget that the market has improved much the 2 months ending 2019. So we've seen product tanker rates shoot up from 5,000-6,000 per day to 30,000 plus. I'm talking about MRs. So low sulfur fuel oil transportation has contributed in that respect. So the healthy rates we've seen the last month of 19 were also part of low sulfur being supplied to various ports in the world, bunkering ports. As far as problems are concerned, of course, you know, for us switching to low sulfur and being supplied by the end of the year and the beginning of, in order to be ready at the beginning of next, so we faced delays in bunkering, but this has all been sorted out. Price also, I mean, price differential has shot up, so that was a big problem for us. But things have, since then, have, let's say, starting to normalize. We've seen spreads coming down and ample supplies of low sulfur fuel in all bunkering ports. So I think the problem that we anticipated that would be huge is sort of settling down now.
Sure. And then Stamatis, you're the only one on the panel with scrubbers. You know, I know that the charterers paid for most of them there and not a huge CapEx from your view. But if you can kind of talk about your scrubber strategy, how that's panned out, fuel availability issues, you know, that was a concern for some owners to not install scrubbers was they weren't sure they could find the HSFO thereafter. So have you bought forward to satisfy that kind of uncertainty, or what's your scrubber strategy?
Well, thank you, Randy. Well, we as a company, we decided to have a very balanced approach into the IMO 2020, and the fact that we operate ships that are bigger and they consume more, you know, that potentially would have made the choice of installing scrubbers more economical or to make sense, at least in a piece of paper. We did not want to take the risk ourselves, so we got into partnership agreements with some of the world's largest dry bulk charters, and they paid in full the scrubber installation, the procurement of the equipment, and to the most extent the off-hires that we had sustained. And in turn, they took the ship for a period of 3 to 5 years. On top of everything, we are making a profit sharing on the spread. So we have a profit sharing agreement with the charterers that if, for example, the spread exceeds a certain amount, we will be getting a profit element, which it's not substantial, but it is something to really make sense for the whole investment. For the remaining of the fleet, we took the view early in the beginning of the second half of 2019 in order to avoid any supply issues or compliance issues with the fuels to procure the so-called marine gas oil, which we knew that it would have been the transition fuel for us for the first quarter of 2020. Nowadays, I mean, we're not even in the end of February, and we find that, like the other speaker said, the supply of low sulfur marine fuels is abundant, and we don't really face any issues in getting that for the non-scrubber fitted ships.
Sure. And now the current spread is obviously pretty tight, but much of that is likely due to weak distillate demand and obviously the small refining margins. So with that, have any of you maybe bought forward some of your VLSFO requirements to kind of hedge in currently low prices before they possibly expand post-coronavirus or in the coming months?
You're not directing the question to anyone in particular, so you might have a couple of people.
Yeah, the more the merrier. Go ahead.
I can tell you no, we have not done it.
Now, from our side, Kim and Concordia, you know, we have done it, and we did do it. We didn't expect, as I said before, the spreads to be wild. We thought they were going to be okay. But since we did not, and we did choose not to invest in scrubbers, and we did also take, we didn't take the scrubbers, but we did hedge some of the MGO consumption going forward. But in all fairness, we did that at the time when we made the decision not to do scrubbers, so it was higher at the time, I have to say. But now is probably a very good time to go in again and maybe add some to it. So I'm afraid that hedge. The price today is lower than the hedge, but on the other hand, whatever 60-70% of the fleet is then enjoying lower MGO prices or very low sulfur for fuel oil. So that's our position. And another reason why we didn't do the scrubbers was that we have fullest respect for the VLCC owners. You know, burning 60, 70, 80 tons a day, and Cape owners, and not to talk about container owners, burning 200 tons a day, are putting scrubbers on. And, of course, their calculation might not look as smart now, but still, $200 is still $200. So, but in the MR and the product tanker side, we realize that, you know, there's only 10%, that was roughly 10% that's going to have scrubbers. So 90% will not have it. And those 90% will dictate, if you will, set the freight market based on the lower sulfur compliant fuel, and that's as Eddie was saying, that's perfectly the way it was, and the market went up during the fall nicely. Yeah, I am there.
Sure. All right, and then I guess one more question before we switch gears to coronavirus. Looking at IMO 2020 and now IMO 2030 and IMO 2050 and beyond, you know, what is kind of next in terms of the next technology or the transition to reduce, you know, carbon emissions and your carbon footprint and these things? Is the uncertainty there causing a lot of owners to, you know, defer or delay new build ordering because there hasn't been much standardization or kind of guidance for how to comply? Or what are your thoughts on the next kind of iteration of IMO regulations?
This is Marco. I think that, I don't know if it's been slowing new ordering, but certainly it's not been encouraging it. I think it's very difficult to start to operate in an industry where you have long-term projects, very capital intensive, and nobody has a clear view of what's going to happen in the future. Today, if you go out and you order a ship, probably will be delivered in 21 or 22, and then you have 15 years from there, so you go to 37. 2037, I think it's totally a dark box and nobody has any idea about that. So certainly it is not the most encouraging thing that you're facing. So I think there is a little bit of pushback from owners in ordering ships, plus many other things, but certainly this is not helping. So I think there's going to be a lot of developments. I think there's been new ways of moving in this front, but nobody has any idea in which direction or what will be the preferred system. I think there's a lot of the question mark is what is going to be applied, but the if and when, I think, is kind of certain that we have to move in a much lighter carbon footprint world in the next years.
Hi, Randy, Eddie here. Thank you. I fully agree with Marco there's no guideline here as to technology is concerned. We're definitely going for a lower emission regulation later. We know the deadlines. You know, you've been reading many things. We've been reading many reports. Is it LNG? Who knows? Is it another type of fuel? You know, we yet do not have a clear direction as to where technology is going. Definitely, it seems that the solutions that we found for today are temporary, and I'm talking about the 0.5 and the scrubber. There is a lot of talk about the low sulfur and the damage that this is doing to the environment, as well as the open-loop scrubbers. There are a lot of discussions about the damage that the open-loop scrubbers are doing to the environment. So it seems that we are in a transition period, and we are really looking forward to a sustainable solution, which is not yet provided and not yet proposed by the builders of the vessels.
Sure. That makes sense. Okay, well, let's switch over to coronavirus. Obviously, you know, there's a lot of more complications around what's going on there, the uncertainty there. Obviously, with the whole slowdown of economic activity, certainly impacting demand for all commodities, right? Your products that you're bringing in or exporting from China, as well as iron ore, coal, grains on the dry bulk side. So, with that, you know, what has coronavirus done in terms of your operations? Obviously, we're seeing day rates falling dramatically. The equities have fallen as a result. But have you seen a market slowdown in terms of imports to or exports from China in the last few weeks? So Mattis, if you want to start on the dry bulk side, and then we can flip it over to Kim for the product tanker side.
Yes. We have not really seen any slowdown in respect of demand from China. Obviously, you know, we know that the steel mills are not operating in full capacity because the majority of their workers have not returned back to the factories yet. They're unwinding the process in a very slow manner, which means that they invite people back to work slowly, slowly, and it might take even until mid of March to see, you know, the full force of China going back to the factories. So far, our port calls in China have been quite uneventful. We have not had any issues with the operations whatsoever. Of course, it is not allowed to embark on or disembark any person from the ship. I mean, you cannot send a surveyor, you cannot send a technician, you cannot send anyone in China. So that, in some cases, not to us, but we hear that that might be problematic. The biggest issue about the coronavirus, which is not so related to the demand and supply of raw materials and other products, is how many ships are actually trapped at the shipyards that have either been there to install scrubbers or do the regular dry docks and things like that. In the Capesize segment alone, we have calculated about 50 Capes, and that's almost 10 million deadweight tons, that are at various dry dock locations in China, and they have been delayed due to the coronavirus since the beginning of January, if not since the end of December that they have been there. So a significant amount of the global capacity is actually right now in China, and we don't have any clear outlook as to when this is going to be released.
Okay. And Kim, on the product tanker side?
Well, yeah, starting with the crude side, if I may, just to start in the right end. I mean, there's clearly much less oil being shipped from, into China. I think it's somewhere in the region of 20% down, and that's in terms of number of fixtures, actually. So that has a big impact on the Vs, and the Vs are down to $15,000 a day. They're even worse than the Afras and the Suezmaxes. And that's because, you know, China's import is 80% on VLCCs, and China is 40% of the VLCC business. So this has had a big impact in general. We have seen, this, to some extent, some more exports actually of products from China locally out in the area. And that's probably a demand sign and filled up inventories. So they're starting to export a little bit more. Not that that has had any big impact on the market in any ways, at least not yet. So the overall sentiment is certainly down because of all this, for all the reasons we all know. And operationally, technically, same thing. You know, the port is of course, taking their measures when the ships is coming in. We're not sending we're not crew changes in China and all the rest. And we're putting up pretty extensive guidelines for our own crew on how to handle, you know, a port call in China. With our own gauging and measurements of temperatures and all of that, and pretty strict guidelines, you know, several pages on how you should behave when you are there, very, very detailed ones. So everybody's following that, and ships seem to be, from our point of view at least, coming in, going in and out on a reasonably smooth basis. We have another issue, of course, is that under the charter parties, I think you asked that at some stage, that, you know, legally, most of the charter parties are putting that time on our account. And we're struggling with getting that time to count as lay time with the charter.
Right.
So we've managed a few times, but not all the time, so I have to say. So that is a thing that could potentially be, I mean, that's only if you have a person on board that has a fever or, you know, has potentially the disease, then you can be stuck in that port. It hasn't happened, but if you are, so, you know, in 8% of the time, you will have to have that time on your own, which is something we're still certainly working on.
And you mentioned the crew safety there. Has there been, you know, captains or crews that have kind of said, hey, we don't want to go to China? Right, and is that impacted kind of operationally from that standpoint?
No. From our point standpoint, no. It's smooth. Everybody's willing, no problem. I mean, we have our rules. We know their rules. I mean, the importing country, the Chinese port authorities. So with that, no, people are going.
Okay. And then, Eddie, on the supply side, you know, we're hearing of obviously slowdowns, both in delays in the scrubber retrofits as well as in kind of new build construction. Any thoughts on some of the supply dynamics, how, you know, maybe that's a slight silver lining, if at all, for coronavirus, is the lack of effective fleet supply growth coming out of this?
Well, definitely there will be delays in deliveries of new building vessels. That goes without saying. The exact effect, I don't have it in front of me. I cannot tell you. The facts, the real facts that we know is that the order book as far as the MR2 segment is concerned is on the low side. Before the coronavirus struck, it was at 5.5% for the next couple of years, which meant an annualized increase in the fleet of about 2.5%. Now, with the coronavirus effect, I don't know if these projects will materialize and how the, you know, shipyard capacity will be affected, if it will be affected. As you know, for refined products, you know, the demand, the annual demand, the increase is about 3%. We don't see that so far being changed. I mean, it will be definitely negatively impacted, but we don't know as to what extent that will be impacted. In any case, you know, the fundamentals for the product tanker market are still there, and hopefully the virus situation will be sorted out in a month or two, and therefore we will be back in a dynamic mode in the market, which we had been before year end. So overall, the order book looks good. Last year, by the end of last year, up until end of January, there were 35 MRs only ordered, and this is the number we know. We don't know of any extra orders being placed.
Okay. And Marco, you know, it's pretty obviously that Capesize rates are the most impacted from a volatile perspective when, you know, the Chinese economy literally or metaphorically gets sick, right? So in general, we think about a cascading impact on the rates on smaller asset classes as well. But with that, what can owners do to maybe mitigate that cascading effect for the non-Capesize vessels and actually outperform in this type of market environment? You know, we're seeing the headline rates on a Cape at, I don't know, $3,000 a day, whereas the Panamaxes are still $6,000 a day. So if you can kind of touch on that dynamic.
Well, you know, I think on the hand is we had a kind of a good TC coverage. We've been operating all the ships on short-term TCs, so we're facing this problem on the ships that are coming open now. Like everything, you know, you have to try. Let me go back. I agree with you that at the end of the day, the bigger ships are more impacted. But then also there is to be said that the bigger ships, if the market improves, then they go to much higher numbers. So, you know, there is a trade-off there. On the smaller ships, they've been still holding because the mean for the handy, there's a lot of other trades. You know, they are more regional ships, the smaller handy bulkers, so they've not been impacted directly by China. So that's the only benefit. If you are in a lucky position in certain parts of the world, you're not all your ships down east, and you have a good position a little bit spread around the world, that's why you're saving yourself on a Cape. You know, I think you're very much living and dying by what happened in China. But then I'm not an expert on that. I would assume that's the situation.
Sure. Okay, and I guess kind of looking back at years past, what can you tell us about the ramping back up of the Chinese economy in prior years following the Chinese New Year? And what are maybe some of the read-throughs for a rebound following this kind of current extended Chinese New Year and coronavirus? So maybe, Kim, you know, to start, what do you think is in store for the shipping markets kind of during this ramping up period? And will that disruption create some kind of short-term opportunities?
Well, ramping up, what is ramping up? Do you mean?
That's my question to you.
Yeah, because the ramping up we've seen so far, because I think they've been back for a few days, you know, again, the Stena Group is building a few ships in China, and on those yards, there was nobody there during the new year. And then when they started, you know, they came with, you know, instead of 600 people on the ship, there were 100 people or 50 people. So very, very minimal. And that's the ramp up. And I'm not even prepared to call it ramp up. You know, it's very slowly getting back, at least on that side. And it seems to be a general consensus, too, that, you know, this is going to go slow. And they are very meticulous about it, the way they handle it, which is fine and good. And they cut off everything. So, you know, I'm not expecting a ramp up in any ways now before there has been some kind of a grip over the stopping the virus to spread or at least go down in numbers of spreads every day. At that time, whenever that is, that's the only thing I would never ever try to predict. Yes, then we can certainly see a big, you know, catch-up effect, if you will, where things will start to happen at the same time, and that's normally good for shipping when everybody is rushing to do everything at the same time and chase every ship there is. So that moment we're looking forward to, but up until then, that ramp up is just a tiny one.
Randy, thank you, if I may add something to what Kim has said. I mean, you know, last year we've seen a major completion of Chinese refineries, and we've seen also the Chinese government announcing a 50% increase in export, in the export quota. So that was the story before the coronavirus hit. And this meant that the Chinese will start exporting more refined products, which is good in any case because it will absorb tonnage. In any case, and that was reflected also in the last quarter, China has imported 15% more of crude oil. So the story was looking really good before the coronavirus hit, and I cannot imagine why the Chinese will not give the stimulus back to the economy in order for this to come back. So as soon as the virus is over, I think that, you know, the Chinese will do whatever it takes to give back to the economy, and I think they've already proposed some measures in order to prepare the economy for the next stage after the coronavirus. So I'm optimistic.
Okay.
Well, I don't add this comment. It's Marco. You know, I think probably the trend is more of your thoughts, but I think that China has really been flooding the market with liquidity in order to avoid a slump in the economy. So I think that I agree with that. This should be a V-shaped recovery. Probably we risk the opposite, that we're creating a bubble if they're not very far quick in reining in the excess liquidity they've been putting in the market. But this said, I think the recovery, the bouncing back should be pretty fast. You know, they've been taking very drastic economic measures, financial measures in China to avoid the slump of the economy.
Sure. Okay, well, all that being said, for the three MR owners, what are kind of average MR rates that you're actually earning today? We've seen a pretty large range from the different brokers, but looking at actual rates earned on the MRs today, and where do you expect this to kind of play out in the coming quarters? Tim, we can start with you, or...
Yeah, am I allowed to say that?
Yeah. Well, you know, what's the current going market for?
The current going market that I can talk about, not necessarily our ships and what we're doing, because, you know, we guide only once every quarter, you know, give guidance on our fixing. Let's back up. The guiding we gave 30th of January was 50% fixed in Q1. At $20,300 a day. Since then, February has obviously dragged it down, and the market is lower. Far East is not very healthy. I think that's in the $12,000 to $14,000 a day. The Atlantic combination could be between 15 to 20 if you're lucky. Otherwise, the single trip or the back the round trip for TC2 would be 12,000 or so. So it's certainly been lower than what it was, and I expect that, unfortunately, to continue until they get to the grips with the virus. And I agree with the other guys. When that happens, and that's what I said too, sure, then the catch-up will come, and then you can call it B, whatever you want. But then things will shoot up again.
Sure. Marco, as a private company, what are your MRs earning today?
Well, you know, they've been similar numbers than what Kim was saying. The matter that I would like to emphasize, you know, we have some LR2s in Asia and the East, and there is a dramatic difference between the East rates and West rates. But especially, it's not even the rates. The rates have been coming down, and that's fine. But what I've been noticing is that the market, there's no liquidity. There's not a lot of liquidity in the market. The global number of transactions have come down. And especially the time charter market has really vaporized since it started the story of the coronavirus. Because there's been a change of sentiment of charterers, and nobody wants to take commitment for longer periods, for 1 year, 3 years, which if you go back 1 month, at the beginning of January, an LR2 probably was fixed for 2 years at 25,000, and now it's difficult to get a quote, so also for 1 year. So I think it is more that it's lacking of depth in the market than rates coming off. I think this is a little bit my vision of the whole thing.
Sure. All right, and then Stamatis, you know, we're seeing these average Capesize rates according to the BCI at 3,000 a day, 2,600 a day, whatever it is. Kind of what are your Capes earning in this market, and where do you expect them to go through the remainder of the year?
Well, thank you. The thing here is that the Baltic and the average five routes of the Capesizes unfortunately do not represent an actual picture of where the rates are, because the Baltic Exchange did a very poor job in adjusting the index for the compliant fuels. So instead of them, you know, issuing a second, a parallel index, you know, to start calculating what the cost of the compliant fuel is, they just went out and prematurely adjusted the index in a way that created a huge distortion in the market. What people may not know is that the first, the January dollars per ton on the Capesizes has been the highest level of the last 5 years. So on an actual voyage basis, you know, the Capesize market has been one of the strongest, you know, in the recent history. So it's a little bit deceiving. Yes, the rates appear to be at $2,500 a day, but on a dollars per ton, on a voyage-related revenues, it's the highest of the last 5 years. So that's a little bit conflicting there. Going to the fundamentals of the market, the biggest issue, except for the coronavirus, of course, last year in 2019 was Vale, which is a very it's a cornerstone producer of iron ore, not only because they're one of the biggest, but also the ton mile, since they are located far away from China, plays a much bigger role into the whole shipping demand and supply. Therefore, Vale has increased their estimate for the production by about 50 million tons. So this incremental supply of iron ore into the market, which is going to be hopefully reintroduced from the second quarter onwards, we expect that is going to make a material difference into the Capesize rates. Right now, the forward freight agreements from Q2 until the Q4 inclusive are stating a market average of about $15,000 a day. And the market now in the, you know, towards the end of February is at 2.5. So obviously, even though the FFAs are not, you know, a leading indicator of the market, that gives a very strong sentiment as to where the rates are going to be for the remaining of the year.
Sure, that's fair. All right, well, you know, we have a few quick questions on the Q&A board from listeners, so I want to get to those since we only have about 5 to 10 minutes remaining. So first, you know, a question regarding future fuel. You know, it seems like there is a push for LNG as the predominant solution, at least for now. Is there a likelihood that LNG could not be a good fuel? In other words, if an owner orders an LNG-fueled ship, what risk does that owner bear?
Kim, since I didn't comment on it last time, I think LNG will be temporary, I'm sorry to say. Somebody was asking before or mentioning that we haven't got any directory from anyone what the engine should be. We're not going to get any directory. The only direction we are getting is from whatever authorities and politicians there are in the world, is zero CO2. Please fix it. It's up to us to try to do that. And with that, it's unfortunate because LNG is such a good product otherwise, in every other respect, but not from that respect, as we all know. So it will not solve the CO2 issue, and it will be short term. And to spend $10 million extra on an engine to have a short term solution, no wonder ship owners are hesitant in doing so. And I'm glad they are hesitant in doing so, because finally, we have got an order book that is looking, you know, pretty okay. Ideally, in an ideal world, that order book should never be more than 10% of the existing fleet. And we're at that, or under, actually, which is good. So let's keep it like that for some time and go back to our drawing boards, technical divisions and people and whatever, and try to find this future solution.
The environmental impact of LNG is not yet defined, so I agree fully with Kim. I think I said it before that it's a transitional fuel. It's not the final solution if, you know, we find something. And I'm just repeating that I was reading a very interesting report today, which was comparing LNG with MGO, with the 0.1. So sulfur content, and they found in that report that the MGO was much better environmentally than the LNG.
Sure. Okay, we've got another question from the audience here. What do you expect the spread between VLSFO and HSFO will stabilize at? You know, we've seen over $300 a ton a month ago, currently $180 a ton. Do you see this tightening to 150, 120, 100, or expanding back to 200, right? What is kind of your rest of the year average in terms of VLSFO, HSFO spread? Stamatis, we'll start with you.
For the rest of the year, if I was to pick a number, I would say between 150 and 200, so 175 as like an average for the remaining of the year.
Yeah, that's fair. That's kind of in line with our expectations. Anyone else agree or disagree?
Randy, I was just looking today at the fuel prices just to compare, and we are today at the average is around 175. I mean, in Singapore it's about 200. In Rotterdam it's much less. So we are today averaging 175. So I would be a bit more bold than Stamatis, and I would say 150 by year end.
Okay, that's fair. In that 150, 175 range. All right. Last question here from the audience, and it's kind of multifaceted. So please feel free to break it apart. Have there been any new product tanker trade patterns emerging since the coronavirus epidemic broke out last month? If so, what are they? Following that, are the headline Baltic TCE assessments, you know, often based on normal times, underestimating the actual earning power of tankers if there are some of these new, unusual tanker trades of significant volume? So any new product tanker trade patterns emerging since the coronavirus broke out? You know, we're hearing of some diverted cargoes and things of that nature. So have you all seen anything in the market? I will call you out, Eddie.
No, I haven't, Randy, to be frank.
Okay. Kim, any color on that?
I said it first thing this afternoon. I haven't seen that either. I cannot point at one single trade that is big or huge or very continuous in any ways. There are, but as you said, diversions and there are some storage and all of that. And but you don't have to have that. So this Baltic thing or whatever it was, the index thing. I still think that the indices are okay. There is not a new trade where you should add in to make it all look good. Of course, all these small things, as I said before, adds to the overall utilization of the ship. It's not big, but it's small things. And I think Eddie said it before, one thing that has really helped the market, which is part of the IMO complexity, is that it's been delays in imports, you know. But that is probably just short term. But that's one reason. Other than that, nothing in particular.
Got it. Well, that's it for me and from the audience. So just to be mindful of time, thank you again, everyone, for joining us on the call and on the webcast. Also, obviously, to the four owners here, thank you for the time and the color. I think it was very worthwhile. 45 minutes or so, and thank you to Capital Inc. for organizing. So if you all have any questions, feel free to reach out to myself, Randy Givens at Jefferies, or to Capital Inc. Directly. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.